Do you have trouble grabbing your audience's attention in those critical first seconds? If so, we've got you covered. We're giving away a free guide called 10 Hooks to Open Your Next Talk. It's jam-packed with tested techniques to effortlessly engage any audience. In this guide, you'll discover the best hooks that tap into what your listeners really want to hear, myth-busting strategies to intrigue even the toughest crowds, and brain-priming methods to maximize your talk's impact. Whether you're speaking at conferences, selling from stage, or delivering keynotes, this guide will become your secret weapon to transform nerve-wracking openings into powerful, attention-grabbing moments. So go to www.thenickdemus.com/10hooks right now to get your free copy today. This is the Creative Soulpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Demus. Let's go. Welcome back, my friend, to the podcast. I've got a great guest for you today. I was a panelist, well, really a judge, capital J judge, for the National Speakers Association, SoCal, Southern California, y'all, the SoCal storytelling competition. And this man that you're about to meet gave an incredible presentation, a talk that really touched me and was really interesting. And we just connected afterward. And I was like, you got to come on the podcast. You got to come on the podcast. And then I read his book that we're going to get into and his story that is so beautiful. Dr. Derek Noble, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Nick. I appreciate it. Yeah, looking forward to it.
You are so welcome. So you are a leadership expert.
So I've been told.
So you've been told. I love that. You know, like we can't really say that about ourselves, but when somebody else says it, you're like, oh, okay, I guess so.
Absolutely.
I guess I'm an expert.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's how that came to me a few years ago, actually. Somebody shared that with me. I was speaking for the FBI. And the guy who was introducing me was trying to get some information. And I just kind of shared with him a little bit of my background. He said, well, it sounds to me like you're a leadership expert. I said, oh, okay. So that's how they introduced me.
And now it's part of your introduction all the time, right? I mean, yeah. It is interesting how we can take on what other people say about us easier than how we can put it on in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And in some ways, that's true of leaders.
Very true.
I would dare to say that, you know, while we may call ourselves a leader sometimes, leadership is earned.
Yes, very much so. And I found that the people who are typically the best leaders are the ones who didn't necessarily seek it out. It sought them. I have found that when people say, I am determined, I'm going to be a leader or the leader, a lot of times they're doing it for the wrong motive. So I'm very fond of saying this life found me. I did not search for it.
Yeah, I so get that. I did not plan to be a leader at any point. And right. Things just kept happening that drew me into that position in a way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But let's back up. Mm-hmm. I want to back up to way, way back.
Okay.
To when you were a kid.
Okay.
And speaking of sort of the journey to getting to leadership, that you were an unlikely leader.
Oh, boy.
In many ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I had a severe stutter and a lisp. And I always tell people stuttering and lisping, imagine Porky Pig and Sylvester the Cat having a child. Those were my speech patterns. Boys and girls, ask your parents who those characters are. But as a stutterer, it took me forever to get the words out. And as a lisper, when I finally did get the words out, I was spitting and drooling all over the place. So you can imagine how people made fun of me. Plus, I wasn't the biggest, strongest kid that there was. So I got picked on a lot. Unfortunately, sometimes it started with my family. And it went from family to people at school and people at church. So I was just really, really withdrawn. I felt that the only person who was a champion for me was my mother. And she passed away when I was 7. In fact, I'm the one who discovered her body. I was going to wake her up so that she could get me ready for school, which was our morning ritual. And this morning I shook her and nothing happened. So when mom was gone, I very well remember people saying, okay, your protector is gone now. And that made things even worse for me. So I was really, really, really in a shell. And then came fifth grade and a man named Lionel Ward. Want me to talk about him?
I absolutely do because, well, first of all, let me say this. I'm so sorry about your mom.
Oh, thank
and
you.
As a child at seven, to discover her had to have been a huge turning point for you in your life and a huge shift. And so my heart goes to you and your family at that time.
Thank you.
Even now, I'm sure there are reverberations from that moment.
Very much so. My family was never the same in my eyes after that. Well, for me, after discovering mom, and I'll never forget the day, May 4th, 1978, after discovering her, my stutter got much worse. Mm. And after discovering her, my father had to be committed to the state mental institution because mom's death just really had a bad effect on him. And so a couple of my older siblings dropped out of college to be our guardians. In fact, the three youngest siblings were basically adopted by two of our older brothers. And, you know, God bless them, but they were basically kids themselves. They were college students, and they did not really know how to relate to kids. They didn't really know how to talk to us. In many ways, they were abusive, emotionally, physically, certainly. So, yeah, my family was never the same after mom died. And so I was really looking and searching for some meaning and some purpose and some hope. I remember as a kid just crying so much. And sometimes there wasn't even a trigger. I would just sit and cry all the time. So I found a little respite at church. I grew up in church. I'm a church kid. So I found some respite there. But I also got made fun of by some of the people there, too. So I just never really felt that I fit in anywhere. And when I got to fifth grade, my school hired a new principal. And his name was Lionel Ward. Mr. Ward, and I said this in the book, I was immediately drawn to him because he was, first of all, he was the best dressed man I had ever seen in my life. I remember when I was a kid, we used to get copies of GQ magazine. Mm-hmm. And we would look at the people dressed up. And Mr. Ward looked like he stepped right out of GQ magazine. So that was interesting to me. But he was also a no-nonsense type of guy. The school I was attending could be very violent, and there were fights in the school. I mean, it was a school in the hood.
Where was it that you grew up?
Little Rock, Arkansas.
Little Rock.
Born and raised in Little Rock, Arkansas, yeah. It wasn't the safest school. It wasn't the safest neighborhood, and it had a reputation for fights throughout the Little Rock school district. So it was kind of like a no man's land from what I understand. It was like the last resort. If you had an ineffective principal, that's where they got sent. You know, so that they wouldn't do too much damage because those kids were messed up already, which was the mindset. Mr. Ward came in with a totally different mindset. He came in with this may be right now the worst school in the district, but by the time I get through with it, there'll be a waiting list. And there certainly was. So he really helped me in a lot of ways.
I mean, talk about a leader. Look right there. That's that vision that he had. And in your book, and the book, by the way, for all you out there, is called Leadership Launch, Essential Skills for New Leaders. We'll put a link in the show notes so you can click right on it and purchase it.
Yeah.
In the book, you talk about a pivotal moment for you when he didn't allow you to not fully be yourself. He didn't allow you to not speak your truth.
Yeah.
He kind of forced you in a way, in a beautiful way.
Oh, boy, did he.
Will you share a bit of that with us?
Sure. Forced me in a beautiful way, but a scary way for me as a little tongue-tied kid. I was hiding in the library. And the reason why I was hiding in the library was because I didn't like going to recess because I always got picked on and made fun of. So my teachers would allow me to just stay in the library and read. I always loved reading. And just that's a throwback to my mom. I thank God for my mother because she instilled in me a love of reading. I remember my mom bought a set of the World Book Encyclopedias, and she really did not have the money for it, but she wanted me to have reading material at the house. And then a few months later, she was gone. So that love for reading was a legacy of hers. So I was in the library hiding and reading. And Mr. Ward, now keep in mind, he's a new principal at this time. So he comes into the library, pokes his head in, and he sees me. And he immediately goes to the table, and I immediately want to go under the table because I'm like, oh, am I in trouble for being in the library? And in this big booming baritone voice of his, he said, I don't know you. Why don't I know you? And why are you hiding in the library? So I kind of told him what the whole story was. And he said, oh, so you love to read. So he took me by the hand, literally, and walked me around the library and helped me pick out some books that he wanted me to read. And he asked me to read to him. I started reading and I was stuttering, of course, but he said, man, you're a great reader. So the very next day, he comes over the intercom in my classroom and says, Mrs. K, will you send Derek Noble to my office right now? He's going to read the afternoon announcements for us. And people started laughing because, of course, I could barely talk. So I go down to the office. I go into Mr. Ward's office and I try to tell him, Mr. Ward, this is a mistake. I can't talk. And before I got the words out, he looked at me, pointed his finger and said, don't you dare tell me you can't read these announcements. You are more than your stutter. You are a reader. Then he gave me the sheet of announcements. He said, now you got 5 minutes to practice. You're on in five. And he walked away. So I read the announcements over the intercom that day. I stuttered and stammered my way through them. But he stood behind me, Nick, the entire time with a smile on his face. And so every time I got nervous, I looked at him and he smiled and he gave me the thumbs up. So I kept stuttering and kept reading. And it took me forever to get through the announcements. But when I was done, he took the microphone from me and said, faculty and staff, boys and girls, that was Derek Noble, one of our best readers. Give him a thunderous round of applause. And I heard it reverberating throughout the school. And that was the day my life changed for the better. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I mean, what a gift.
Yeah.
That man gave you.
Yes.
And I think when I'm struck, you know, as we talk leadership, that this was a new leader.
Yes.
In this school. And in the book, you talk about there's some pitfalls of being a new leader, particularly if you take over an organization or a situation, whatever yeah. that might be. And you put them into three different types, which I loved, by the way. I absolutely love this in the book. You called them the awful autocrat.
Yeah.
Which is the type of leader who, and you, I'm going to paraphrase here, and you can
right ahead.
help me out here. But essentially, the awful autocrat who comes in and is just nasty and mean and difficult and hard to work for and nothing's good and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
The aloof apathetic, that's the leader who really doesn't give a shit anymore, doesn't really want to be there, doesn't really care.
Yep.
And then the absolute angel.
Yeah.
Who, you know, by the title, you can kind of guess. And as somebody who comes in after one of these types, there's many different pitfalls that can happen. And the reason I'm talking about this first is because I've replaced, when I ran a not-for-profit theater company in Oklahoma City, not too far from Little Rock.
Yeah, right up the street.
Right up the street. I replaced an awful autocrat.
Wow. Yeah.
And the time they were so desperate for a leader, and I was young, and I had lots of energy, and I could get going, I could ground run go.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I left, I was the absolute angel.
Cool.
And I knew that the person that replaced me was going to have absolute freaking hell.
Yes.
And they did.
Yes.
They lasted not even a year. And then somebody had to replace. There was like, it was like a sacrificial lamb almost.
Right. It's hard to replace an absolute angel, man. Yeah.
So talk to me about if you are a new leader, and you just want to like get going, what are some wins, some early strategies, some things that you can do as a new leader? And this is true, even if you business owners out there, you're leaders. As an entrepreneur, you're a leader.
Absolutely.
So what are some strategies that you, that can create some early wins for you?
First and foremost, the number one cause of workplace dissatisfaction, according to Harvard Business Review, is when employees feel they have not been heard. When people feel management, supervisors don't listen to them, it creates a toxic environment. So the very first thing I always recommend, especially to new leaders, is go in and conduct listening sessions. And this is not a session where you say, let me tell you my vision for this organization, this business, or whatever the case may be. You don't necessarily want to do that. Now, eventually you do need to share that. But the first thing you want to do is listen to them, have what I call listening sessions. And there are three questions that I typically ask and I recommend that you ask at a listening session. Number one, what do you love the most about this place? Okay. And this, of course, is if you're going into an established business. Yeah. So what do you like most about this place? Because typically when you have listening sessions, they quickly turn into gripe sessions. Because let me tell you what's wrong. I force people not to start there. I really force people to say, okay, I'm sure that there are some things that we need to change here. But before we get to that, tell me why you're still here. Tell me what, there must be something about this organization that keeps you here. There must be something about this business, something about this place that keeps you here. So what is it? So you do that. And what I also do, Nick, is if people have a hard time answering that question, I don't move on. Sometimes I just let them sit in silence. And I've learned that over the years. I think a lot of times we think we need to fill all the dead spaces with words. Yeah. But sometimes the most powerful thing you can do is let people sit in silence and think. So I'm like, okay, think about what you like about it. And I'll sit there and I'll look at them and I'll smile. I just did this recently at a university down south. And for 10 minutes, and that is not an exaggeration, for 10 minutes, I had blank stares. And I kept saying jokingly to lighten the mood, I can wait. We have all day. So they started talking about the things that they liked. Now, there's a reason why I do that. I think that creates momentum. When you start off with something positive like that, it creates momentum so that when you go into the quote unquote gripe session, people aren't naturally nasty and mean. Okay. So the first question you ask is, what are we doing well? What's good about this place? The second question you ask is, what needs to be improved? What can we improve around here? Now, these are not things we need to get rid of. These are things that may not be working well, but if we tweak them a little bit, they could get better. So what are we doing around here that needs to improve? And then the third question I ask is, what are we doing that needs to be removed, or who needs to be removed? Because sometimes the problem is not a structure or a system. Sometimes the problem is a person. And people need to be able to say that and do that freely. So that's the first thing I recommend coming in as a new leader. Just spend some time listening.
What all that boils down to that I'm hearing you say is communication.
Very much so.
And I think communication, it's a skill. It's a learned skill.
Yes.
Listen more than talk. You know, all of that, that's all part of that skill set that you were talking about. And there was an interesting statistic that you said that 91% of workforce say their leaders lack is communication.
Exactly.
That was a startling statistic to me in the book.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, as you were just talking, about how this was for new leaders, people stepping into new positions.
Yeah.
But that could be said for any time.
I'm glad you saw that.
For you entrepreneurs out there, they're like, well, I'm not new. Guess what? All three of those questions are perfect to ask your team at any time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Speaking of newer entrepreneurs, newer business owners, newer organization leaders, one of the things that people seem to have the most trouble with that I see.
Okay.
And I'll see if you agree with this, that I see is the word delegation.
Ah. Yes. Yeah. We're often told that we need to delegate, but we are seldom told how to do it. Yeah. And I wanted to make sure that I address that in the book as well. And I can address it now if you'd like me to.
But. Sure. You could say a word or two about it for sure, because I think that it's something that I know that those of you that are listening, perk up your ears, because I know that you struggle with this. This is something I hear from my clients, from my students over and over and over again. That I know I need to let go. I know I need to let go, but I don't know how.
Yeah.
Do you have any words of advice for them on how?
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, know the difference between delegating and dumping. A lot of times we're dumping when we think we're delegating.
That's good.
There you go. Celebrate that one. To dump is to look at your responsibilities and say, I don't like doing this, so let me give it to somebody else. It's like getting rid of the things you don't want to do. And people know when they're being dumped on. People know the only reason Nick asked me to do this is because Nick hates doing it. So it creates a lot of tension. So that's dumping.
Okay, maybe delegating. Guilty. Maybe even guilty of that in the past. I don't know. Maybe.
Delegating, though, is the word I like to use for delegating is empowering.
Yeah.
When you delegate, what you're actually doing is empowering people on your team. You're saying to the people, I know you are gifted in this area, or I know you can become gifted in this area. And because I believe in you and trust you, I'm going to take this responsibility off my plate and give it to you because I trust you that much. That empowers somebody rather than saying, you know, I don't want to do this. Go do this for me. Okay. So the first how is to know the difference between delegating and dumping. And I'd just like to ask your audience out there, just kind of make a mental note. Have there been times when you have dumped when you actually thought you were delegating? Mm-hmm. Be honest. Many of us have done that. So the second how, and this really gets into the nuts and bolts of delegation. I say in the book that there are four types of employees, and there's only one of those four who is a candidate for delegation. Okay. The only people on your team to whom you are to delegate responsibility are people who meet two criteria. Number one, they have to be excellent at their job. And notice I didn't say good. They have to be excellent at their job. Okay. And of course, if you delegate responsibility to somebody who's not good at their job, they're not going to do a good job of the delegated task that you've given them. So first of all, they have to be excellent at their job. But secondly, they have to have a superior attitude. They have to have a great attitude. They have to be a team player. They have to be somebody who gets along with other people. They're not the type of person who creates drama at work. Now, if they do not have both of those criteria at the same time, don't you dare delegate anything to them. These are the people that I call superstars, by the way. Your superstars are, and I gave this sports analogy, you have people on your team who can really carry the entire team. If you have people on your team who have a great attitude and they're great at their job, they can be your partner. You need to spend time with them and say, hey, I'm going to give half of this to you because I know you could do this just as well as I could. If you don't do that with them, Nick, they're going to feel as if their talents are being wasted.
Yeah.
And they're going to do like LeBron James did and say, well, I'm taking my talents elsewhere. So,
yep.
Yeah. So when it comes to delegation, those are the only people to whom you delegate. Now, if they don't meet those two criteria, they're not candidates for delegation yet.
There was a word in there that I lived by as and still do as a leader with my teams.
Yeah.
I actually have several teams.
Cool.
Because of different projects. Each one of my projects, a film has a team, a theater project has a team. And then okay. Nick Demas Media, we have a team.
Yeah.
And one of the words that you, that the word that you said several times that I live by is empowerment.
Yes.
Is empower.
Absolutely.
I think it's truly vital to empower people, particularly when you're going through great growth or through great change in the organization.
Yes.
So how do you suggest people navigate change as a leader?
Ah, awesome. Great question, by the way. And that's a question I have asked of me several times. When it comes to change, people first have to change their mind about change. We've all heard this saying before, people don't like change. I completely disagree with that. It's not that people don't like change. People do not like poorly executed change. That's the difference.
Ooh, another mic drop. Another mic drop moment.
Change itself. Thank you. Change itself is not the issue. It's the way we implement change. I would venture to bet that anybody who has gone through a change that did not go over well can point to where it really went awry. It's not that something changed. You know, because we are actually, Nick, more used to change than we think we are. People expect change every day. You know, the day is different. So it's not change itself. It's the way change is rolled out. There are three change questions, and I have shared these all over, literally, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback on these. Three change questions that you have to ask and answer before you implement any change. And by the way, if you don't have answers to these questions, the change you want to implement is premature. Don't do it until you have answers to these. Question number one, why is this change necessary? And that's extremely important. You've got to, the best way to motivate people is to give them an understanding of the why.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed completely. Why? Asking that why question is so important. And then communicating, again, that communication word, the why, is so very important, particularly in those growth periods.
I do want to give an example to kind of drive this home with that first question. I was coaching a guy, I won't call the name of the organization, but he's the CEO of an organization in Washington, D.C. And I've been his coach for a while, his leadership coach. He called me on an emergency call, which I allow those that I coach to do. He said, "Derek, here's my issue. I changed our workplace computer environment from PCs to Mac. And I told everybody that there's a mandatory Mac training on Monday, and the roof just came off the place. What did I do wrong?" And here's the first question I asked him, which goes to that first change question. I said, "Did you tell your people why you were making the change?" I said, "Tell me, why are you making the change?" And long story short, he went through the reasons why he wanted to change from PC to Mac. I said, "Dude, those are great reasons. Why didn't you tell your people those reasons?" He said, "Well, I didn't think I needed to." I said, "And that's why you have a mutiny on your hands. You've got it. See, you thought that they were upset about Mac. It wasn't Mac. The fact was that you didn't tell them why we're switching to Mac. So now they feel that this is just an extra added thing that he's doing. And now we have this mandatory training on Monday and I'm going to lose a day of work, blah, blah, blah." So you've got to first answer and ask the question, why is this change necessary? Here's the second question, though. The second question is, what will this change require that I do differently? Because one of the reasons people resist change is because with change comes a new way of doing things. And you have to be honest about that and let people know, okay, now with this change, here's what's going to transpire in our organization. Maybe, and it just kind of depends on what the organization is or the group is, maybe the change means that you'll have to do extra paperwork. Maybe the change means that you'll get new equipment. Whatever the case may be, you've got to let people know, as a result of this change, here's what's going to be different. Here's what you're going to have to do differently. Okay. Now, if you prepare people for that, they won't be caught off guard. The reason why that guy's group was caught off guard was because here's this new change and there's a mandatory all day training on Monday. So they weren't quite prepared for what was going to happen. Third and final change question is, now this is the question, by the way, Nick, that you always want to ask if you want to get people on board with the change. If you feel that you're going to get a lot of resistance, this third question is the most important question. And that question is this: if we fail to make this change, what's going to happen to us? Mm. Now, that's where you paint the bleakest picture you can paint. And I'm not implying that you should be dishonest. I mean, be totally honest with people. You can say, you know what? We can keep the old computer system. However, if we do, here's what's going to happen if we keep the old computer system. Remember, the old computer system got a lot of bugs, so we ended up losing lots of days of work, and you ended up losing your information. With this new system, it's more user-friendly, and you can get 3 days work done in one day. So we can keep the old system if you want to, but if we do, here's what's going to happen. And that's where you get buy-in.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say in all three of these, in all of the and in the example, is enrollment. Yes. Is really enrolling people into your vision. So they not only are they accepting of it, but they almost get excited that it's happening.
Boom. There you go. I like that. They get excited that it's happening. So now they have ownership. Now they have some agency with it, and now they're on board. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what I hear.
Yeah.
And that then empowers them to be leaders as well.
Absolutely. And Nick, it models for them how to negotiate and navigate any other change. I mean, those three questions, Nick, apply to any change that we go through in life. I mean, let's say, for instance, you know, God forbid, but your family is breaking up, you're getting a divorce, and the kids don't know which way they're going. I mean, those three questions help with that. Let's say you're a new leader of a business. Those three questions help you navigate no matter what change they are. And that's what I really enjoy doing. I love giving people principles that can be applied across the board. So
yeah. And these are universal principles that can
absolutely
be used for leadership across, which takes me to the question of what type of leaders do you look for to help you become the greatest version of yourself, the highest version of yourself?
Yeah. Great question. I look, first of all, for curious leaders. And by that, I mean people who are willing to ask questions and to grow, people who are not satisfied with where they are. You are either, and this is not mine, this comes from John Maxwell, but you are either growing as a leader or you are sliding backwards. It's one of the two. There's no in between. You're either growing or you're sliding back. And one of the ways you grow is through curiosity. So I look for leaders who are asking questions. And for me, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Why are we doing it this way? And what did we do before? And what works best? And what isn't working best? So I love leaders who are curious. Now, if you're going to surround yourself with leaders like that, you can't have a huge ego, because if they're curious, they're going to question you.
Yeah.
And you've got to be ready for that. Okay, so Derek, I hear you saying this, but why? You know, I know so many leaders, and I'm sure you've come across leaders like this as well, Nick, who get frustrated anytime they feel they're being challenged. But if I don't have people around me who challenge me, I don't grow. So I want people around me who are going to challenge me.
That was one of the things that I learned early on as a leader.
Yeah.
That when I put up that guard, I was learning less.
Yes.
The team wasn't growing.
Right.
And when I finally surrendered to that and had the realization that, oh, actually, if I can empower them to their greatness.
Yeah.
Not only does it help them grow, but it helps me grow, and it helps the entire team ascend in such a way that it's greater than the sum of any of its parts.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard Nolan Richardson, who used to be the coach for my home team, Arkansas Razorbacks. Nolan Richardson spoke at our high school when I think I was in 10th grade. And he said something back then, Nick, that I have carried with me for the rest of my life. He said, "You will be a great leader when you stop caring about who gets the credit." Mm-hmm. And I love that quote. He said, you know, people say I'm a great coach and I've led the Razorbacks to a national championship, but I always deflect credit, because a coach with nobody on the floor won't win a game. So it's not just me, it's the players as well. So,
yeah. It's the team. Yeah.
It is. It is very much so.
And it is your team. Ultimately.
Yes.
It's your team.
Is. Yeah.
Okay, my friend. Derek, are you willing to do the fast final three that we do here? I know you listened to the podcast episode. I know you did. I know you did your homework. You're not showing up blind, so you already know what these questions are. So they're not that fast for you. But
in the words of that great theologian, Pat Benatar, hit me with your best shot.
Okay, first question.
Yes.
Who would you like to collaborate with that you have not yet?
Who would I like to? Yeah, I gave some thought to that one. And the only ones I think of are people. Well, no. Let me change that. Bryant Gumbel.
Oh, now there is a name from the past that I haven't heard of and thought of in a while.
Man, you know, I've been begging for years. If you know of somebody who knows Bryant Gumbel, please introduce me. The reason why is because he and Sidney Poitier were my models when I was a kid and stuttering. Mm. I would watch them on especially Bryant Gumbel. I would watch him on television on the Today Show, and I would
ask
him. Bryant Gumbel taught me how to speak, and he's never met me. So if I could do anything with Bryant Gumbel, I die a happy man.
Okay, anybody out there who knows Bryant Gumbel or knows a way to get to Bryant Gumbel, please let us know. DM me or DM Derek. And what's your Instagram? What's your LinkedIn?
Dr. Derek Noble.
Okay, there you go. DM him, because my network, you know, in this entertainment, you all out there, somebody knows him. We got to get this. We got to make this happen.
I hope to God someone does. I mean, even if I could just meet him and just shake his hand and say thank you, that's all I want, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know what he's doing these days. Now you're going to send me down like a Google rabbit hole looking him up. He was such a part of my childhood, you know, like every day in the morning before school.
Mine
he was
too.
Part of my childhood. So he and Jane Pauley.
Yes. And I would repeat every word he said. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your next great manifestation? What are you creating in this world next?
My follow-up book to Leadership Launch. Leadership Launch is for specifically new leaders. The next book will be called Leadership Legacy, and it's specifically for seasoned leaders. and how not to get jaded and how to pass the baton to the next generation. So
ooh,
leadership
I like.
Arts, leadership legacies. I'm in the midst of writing it right now.
Ooh, so it's already in process.
Ooh, it is already in process.
Okay, I like this.
Oh, also, I guess what's in process for me, I am doing my second TEDx talk, and I'm excited about that, at Boston College. So I'm putting the finishing touches on that speech.
Congratulations. That's,
thank
that's
you.
Big. Another TED.
Thank you.
Okay. Final question. This is a fill in the blank.
Sure.
I am.
Grateful.
Beautiful.
And that's enough.
Yeah. You don't need to say more than that when you say
exactly.
I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Like that's all you got to say, because it's it's very encompassing of all things.
Yes. Through everything I've been through everything I've experienced, I'm grateful for what I've experienced, and I'm grateful for where I am, and I'm grateful for where I'm headed, and the best is yet to come.
And I am grateful that you spent this time with us today, sharing your wisdom, sharing your knowledge, and there's so much more. We only barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, man.
We barely, here we are 45 minutes in and we barely scratched the surface of your
has
book.
Has it been that long? I'm sorry. I hope I didn't talk your ears off, man. I'm sorry.
No, that's perfect. It's awesome. Yeah. But what my point is we barely scratched the surface. I could talk to you for hours and hours because I geek out on leadership, clearly. I could talk for hours and hours about it. But for anybody out there, go get this book. And I just held it up as if you could see it. But those of you, that are listening, go get Leadership Launch, Essential Skills for New Leaders, Dr. Derek Noble. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you. Much love.
I know you enjoyed today's episode, so be sure to DM Dr. Derek, not only Brian Gumbel's number, for those of you that have it out there, but even if you don't, DM me and him your great takeaway from today. Thank you so much for being here, spending your time with us, and we'll see you on the next episode. Do you want to step on stages, share your story, and make incredible impact? With the Impact Academy, this dream will become a reality. Our transformational program works from the inside out, taking you from lacking confidence and self-doubt to commanding the stage with an inspiring signature talk that engages audiences. It gives you a proven framework strategy alongside performance skills so you can effectively stand out and be remembered as the leading authority in your industry. If you're ready to make a lasting impact, go to www.thenickdemus.com/impact to join the waitlist today.